We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Yo, man, it's your unofficial post-game show here for Summer League Basketball as the Sacramento Kings get their fourth win of the Summer League, beating the Cleveland Cavaliers 94-86. You can hit us up, hit me up on the Elk Grove Kia Talk Line, 916-909-1320. Big thanks to Chris Biederman for joining us earlier on in the show. Big thanks to James Hamm, who's normally with us now, but he had an appointment today, so he joined us an hour early as that game was wrapping up. To talk Kings basketball. If you missed either of those conversations, you could subscribe to the D'Lo and KC podcast wherever you get podcasts from. Of course, you can always check out the show in its entirety over there on youtube.com/ESPN1320 or twitch.tv/ESPN1320. Several different things I want to talk about here, but as I mentioned, it's kind of your unofficial post-game show for the Sacramento Kings winning their fourth straight game here in Summer League. Another reason to be really excited for Neek Clifford. Neek, as we were watching him, like he didn't have a super like dominant game. He was, you know, all right, the assists are starting to rack up. Like he's scoring at a fine clip, but that fourth quarter came around. And what was, you know, a tight game, the Sacramento Kings were in control most of it. They were up 10 at halftime, let that slip away. I don't think they ever lost the lead. I think it got to maybe within one. Sacramento Kings called a timeout. They got the lead immediately back up to 7, but Neek had 7 in that fourth quarter, which helped secure the Sacramento Kings a victory. Another really, really, really good outing for Neek Clifford. Maxime Reynaud scored, I think, most of his points. I'll have to look. I think at least 6 of them came in the first quarter, and that's exactly what it was. He was 2 of 3 in the first quarter, scoring 6, and he, you know, came out. He was aggressive. It looked like he was trying to get his offensive game going very, very early here. And then there's Devin Carter. I do want to mention with Max, if I didn't, 19 points. He also had 9 assists to go along with that. I bring that up because there's, you know, conversations about what his role might be at the point guard position at various points during this upcoming regular season. Devin Carter, obviously there's been a lot of talk about what his role will be as it pertains to the point guard position, the backup point guard position, the third string point guard, the emergency point guard, whatever. Devin had 11 points, 6 assists, and 4 turnovers. To be fair, Max also had 4 turnovers. That's something I'm sure the coaches are going to point out in film as the days move along here. But I thought Devin stunk today, man. Now, admittedly, I was talking to you for the entire game. Game started at 12:30, had it in front of us, watched it. But, again, admittedly, I was talking to y'all. I feel like there was at least 4 times, and there wasn't, but it felt like it, where I avert my eyes, I look at the screen, maybe I'm talking to Biederman, maybe I'm looking at the chatty house, and then I look back at the game, and Devin Carter is picking himself up off the ground. The
last few minutes of the fourth quarter, they weren't playing through point guard Devin Carter. They were playing through Neek Clifford.
Yeah,
Devin was kind of not, I don't want to say off to the side because it makes him like he's doing nothing, but like, yeah, they weren't playing through him at all.
And if I got this right, that's the last, like we're headed into the tournament is next, right? They don't have another game. I think the tournament starts this weekend and they're going to go try to win a Summer League championship. See what the standings look like. Sacramento Kings are 4-0, Oklahoma City 3-0, Charlotte, Los Angeles, San Antonio, Minnesota, Toronto, and Atlanta are all of those teams are 3-0. The Sacramento Kings obviously played the first game of the day. They're 4-0 here on this season, but Summer League season, excuse me. But I didn't think Devin was good. I know I'm the resident hater. That's fine. I own that. I've tried to enter this season with the idea of I'm going to give my brother leeway and I'm going to give my brother some grace after a difficult rookie season. But I swear to you, he kept falling down in this game. And it wasn't like he's picking himself up off the ground because he, oh, look at Devin Carter diving for a loose ball. No, I just feel like he kept hitting the ground. Am I wrong in that?
He had one where he's trying to go around a pick and roll, and he got tangled up, lost the ball there.
Well, I saw one, and I don't remember if it was in the second or third quarter, where like he got beat defensively, ran and tried to catch up, and ran right into Max at the top of the key. And it's like, bruh, you've played more NBA games than anyone out there on the floor. Why do you look so clumsy?
Because he's not playing his position.
And then he took that sorry-ass three-point attempt. Now, let's be clear. He took a terrible three-point shot in the fourth quarter. You can make the argument he took two terrible three-point shots in the fourth quarter. Except one of them went in. And we all know the rules when it comes to taking terrible shots. It's only terrible if you miss. But he took one, and I think it was the first one. He took the first one, and I'm like, oh, come on, man. And it went in. It's like, all right, man, you could. You could. And then he took the other one, and I think he airballed it. It's like, come on, Devin. I want to. I'm telling you, like, as a shoot, like, I want to be in, and I want to ride, and I want to give the, you know, last year's lottery pick a chance. There's something about Devin Carter that frustrates the hell out of me. Whether it's his game, whether it's his demeanor, whether it's Trista's Black Air Force One Supreme energy story, I don't know what it is. And I'm gonna be like straight up, like I absolutely think that plays a factor. It's like, oh man, you going diss our girl? Like, oh okay, all right, like that's family. So, like, I'll remember that, but I'm trying to evaluate his game. Now, his demeanor doesn't have anything to do with his game, but what we were talking about back in game one, like, bro, why are you sulking? That game was 2 minutes in, game one of Summer League. 2 minutes in. He looked like he was sulking. Chris brings it up. Chris ain't wrong. He says, you don't like how he dresses, D-Lo. Chris, you're 100% right, I don't. I think man's got no style. I think I've seen one or two outfits all of last year that I actually liked. The rest is like, bro, you ain't it. I don't care that the man has bad hair. I care that it looks like he was sulking 2 minutes into a summer league game. Or if I'm that coaching staff, I'm looking for Devin to lead this group. I ain't looking for that. Not anymore. Jesse just pointed it out. They was running everything through Neek. We get into this elimination round. We get into this knockout round. We get into whatever's next for the Sacramento Kings in Summer League. I'm like, hey, Neek, lead the way. You be the one to call guys in. You be the one to lead the offense. You be the one to decide what happens out there on the floor. And the thing that bothers me the most is I told you after game one, I just wanted to see Devin look comfortable. And he did. Devin looked comfortable in game number two. Devin looked comfortable in game number three. How did you look uncomfortable today? Like, that is the true sign. And Jesse just said it, man. That is the true sign. You can't take that man out of position. Whatever his position is, let him play it. Do not try to ask him to learn a new skill. Don't try to ask him to be a facilitator at the NBA level. Don't do that. I don't think he can. And I have no interest with the way this team is constructed. I have no interest in my man learning that on the fly. Now, if you want to have a conversation about the Sacramento Kings finding a way to work Neek Clifford, work Maxime Renault into everything they do, hey, I'll listen to that. Does it perhaps sacrifice your best lineups? Maybe you'd be better off putting some guys. I would do it for those guys. I am not interested in sacrificing minutes or games for Devin Carter to play the backup point guard. Go sign a backup point guard. I mean, how much more of a mess could it actually be? We talk about how messy the backcourt is. We've said all year, oh, they got to get rid of one guy. Maybe you go out, you go out and get another point guard. You got to get rid of two, maybe. And we said all of that before they signed Dennis Schroeder. I'm kind of at the point where, at least in terms of that crowded backcourt, I think I'm at the point where it's like, it can't get much worse. So who cares? If you want to go sign Russell Westbrook, go sign him. And I know I'm biased. It's fine. If you want to go sign any other point guard to actually be your backup point guard, yo, man, it's fine. Go sign him. It's cool. Do it. Because it can't get any worse. I mean, you go sign Russell Westbrook. The point guards that I know are out there. Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul, Malcolm Brogdon. You go sign any one of those guys. It's not going to cost you your full MLE. Also, what are you doing with that MLE at this point? Like, nothing is happening in the league. I don't think that the Sacramento Kings are holding out hope, holding out conversation. I think the Jonathan, I don't know how alive the Jonathan Kuminga thing was. I believe it was very alive. But whatever life was in that conversation, I think is dead for a multitude of reasons. The Warriors really do have a lot of control in this. I know Matt George disagrees, but I actually do think the Warriors have a lot of control because they don't have to do anything. Jonathan Kuminga wants to earn money as an NBA player. Right now, the Golden State Warriors might be in the best position to do that. And because the dollar figure is going to be so low, you think they care if they don't play him? You think they care if Steve Kerr just sits him on the bench? What would the cost be, like $8 million, $10 million? Whatever. That'll be fine.
You think Devin Carter was ever put in a position to be successful here?
No.
By the Kings?
No. No.
And we talked about it with Keegan. He doesn't earlier, like fit here. How much here. Of it was Keegan's fault? How much of it is the Kings' fault? How much of it this, do you think is with Devin?
The situation with Devin, I said earlier, I think Keegan Murray holds a lot of responsibility for, you know, if everyone is just adamant that Keegan hasn't developed enough as a basketball player, that's fine. I'm going to put that on Keegan more than I'm going to put on everybody else. Devin, I think, got here in a difficult situation. Devin Carter's situation, I will put exclusively on Monty McNair and the Sacramento Kings. That front office drafted a player who couldn't play to a team that desperately needed a player to come in and play.
At a position they didn't need either.
At a position that they absolutely did not need. You set Devin Carter up for failure immediately. And the second things went south for the Sacramento Kings to start that season, it only got worse. Because you had this situation where it was like, yo, the Sacramento Kings, look, if we're not going to attack the free agent market, if we're not going to attract the trade market, we need someone who could come in here and play well for us immediately out of the draft. Devin Carter gets drafted. We're looking around at each other. We're a little bit confused. We thought a trade was coming. None of that wound up happening. And then immediately that night, we learned he was injured.
Yeah, there's something with the shoulder.
We learned that night dude was injured. And it was like, okay, like how injured? Like there's almost no way he's starting the season injured. Okay. Now, the Sacramento Kings needed to draft a player who could come in immediately and play. That was before they stepped on. That's what they needed to happen. That was before the season started. Then the season starts and you realize, man, this team doesn't have any depth. This team is absolutely lacking a multitude of things. And you've got a draft pick now who can't play. You got a draft pick out who is out until Christmas. And now you've got instability with the coaching staff. Now you got players frustrated with Mike Brown. Then you have a 5-game losing streak. You have that incredible loss to Detroit. You have the Mike Brown firing. Doug Christie gets hired. And now Devin Carter is able to play. And it's like, oh, good, your shoulder's fine. Go out there, kid. Hey, by the way, we need you. Things are bad now. And God, he was terrible. I don't believe that's a fault to him. Just throw him out there, and they needed him to be really, really good right out the gate, and he absolutely couldn't be. Take him back out, send him off to the G League. I will put all of this, all of it, on the Sacramento Kings. Devin Carter does not fit here.
To this day, there's not even hindsight where it's like, oh, yeah, now I get why they might have made the pick. There's just no clarity to why they did that.
It was an absolute, it was a massive failure on the part of Monty McNair and this front office. An absolutely massive failure to take him in the first round of the draft.
This is just my thinking or whatever. It's almost as if maybe they didn't know that his shoulder injury was as serious as it was. I don't understand taking a guy who we all know, like, you desperately need someone to play. Just so why on earth would you take a guy who's not going to be ready till February?
I hear you, but there is no chance that that can be true.
Not even off of pure incompetence?
Okay, if it is, that's an entirely different level of incompetence, because I knew that night. James already knew.
True. It's just a bad pick.
We were getting texts at Tom's Watch Bar like, hey, there's something wrong with Devin. Like, Devin's shoulder's, like, bad. It's like, okay, how bad? Like, surgery bad. Oh, okay. So he's not playing. No.
Yes,
James had the whole thing that night. I could be wrong. Yeah, it's James tomorrow. I think James, in terms of, obviously this didn't have anything to do with the Sacramento Kings at the time, but in terms of prospects leading into the draft, I think he knew about Devin a week before. And so, yeah, that's if it's incompetence, it's an entirely different level of incompetence. And maybe Devin can, maybe the summer league, the off season, and the training camp can all show Devin Carter to be a different type of basketball. Maybe he's a significantly better than what we saw last year. Man, that'd be terrific for him. I just don't think he can possibly be that here.
We just won't have enough opportunity.
And that's it. I don't know how you create that opportunity at that position. We talked earlier about how the Sacramento Kings can create opportunity for Maxime Reynaud. That's not that difficult. We talked earlier about how, if they choose to, it's not that difficult. We talked earlier about how there's an easy opportunity for Nick Clifford to get immediate, impactful, rotational minutes right out the gate. You don't even have to use your imagination to figure that. It's right there. There's virtually, when you talk about the roster as it's currently constructed, and you talk about, you know, Malik is here, Keon's here, DeMar is here. I'm playing all three of them over Devin Carter. Dennis Schroeder is the point guard. I'm playing him over Devin Carter. And this all started with, I need a backup point guard. I'm signing one. I'm not asking Devin Carter to do it. And to go back to an earlier line that you used, to an earlier conversation that you and I had, Jesse, I'll just burn the asset. It's fine. I can't better construct my basketball team without making a trade. But if I can put a better product on the floor, then I will burn this asset to do it. And Devin Carter will be the asset that's burned. And I don't know what could change my mind on that. I told you, I don't need to see a lot from him. I said this the other day. I'm a freaking hypocrite at this point. I said after the first game, not the first game, the second one. It's like, all right, he had that big clunker. He had a massive second game. Cool. Give me something in between in the third game, and I'm fine. It's like, all right, like, cool. He settled into to playing. Uncomfortable, comfortable, comfortable. And then one thing I didn't expect, because if he had gone 0 of 8, 2 points, you know, the 4 rebounds, every other number can remain the same. And I just felt like he shot bad or couldn't score. That's fine. That's whatever. But that's not what, like, he just looked uncomfortable. And it and I'll stall him out again, because again I feel like I'm being hard on Devin Carter. From game one to game two, he didn't become like, oh man, hey, he improved so much from game one to game two. No, he just played better. He's the same basketball player. He's the same basketball player that he was in game three, where he had just a perfectly fine game. And today, it doesn't mean he sucks. It doesn't mean he's gotten so much worse. He didn't have a good game today. But my biggest frustration is he just looked like he couldn't handle that position. And I don't want to see him handle it. Because, again, I'm of the belief, survive and figure it out. If they're waiting for salary to fall off, if they're waiting to clear the books, if they're waiting to do all that, that's fine. The way your roster is constructed right now, you have a team that's good enough to compete. Compete for what? Not a championship, not a conference, but they're good enough to compete. They're good enough to keep the Golden One Center jumping. They're good enough to keep fans with a really high level of interest, and I think they're good enough to keep fans with a certain level of excitement. Now, one thing you might not like, I think the Sacramento Kings can win games this year, but they might not win games exactly the way that you want them to. I think a lot of you would like Neat Clifford, Maxime Reynaud, those guys to go out there, Keegan Murray, Keon Ellis to go out there and be great. It was the scenario Kyle Mattson was laying out at the end of the Insiders. You know, play these young guys, play these fan favorites. I think a lot of you win games that way, and this fan base will be elated. If you did that scenario with Keon, Keegan, Neek, Max, those guys out there getting major run, major, major run, and you win 42 games, 43 games, good enough for, we'll say, the seventh seed. Well, say it was a down year. They got to the seventh seed. Y'all go crazy over that. Tell me I'm wrong. Y'all would be elated over that. What'd I say, 42 wins? You get 42 wins with DeMar, Zach, Domas, Neek being a role player for sure, Max being a role player for sure, Malik, and so on. Do you think you have the same feeling? Do you think you have the same level of excitement? Because I don't think it's just the idea of this year not being exactly what fans wanted it to be. I don't think it's just this single season that has Kings fans kind of throwing their hands up and being frustrated. I think it's the outlook, like the overall outlook of this basketball team moving forward. And this is something we talked about dating back to last year. Maybe it was the middle of last year, where it was like, you know, KC would constantly say, well, you want this team to make the playoffs or don't you? Like, no, man, you're not listening. Like, I absolutely think this team can make the playoffs. I don't think they're the Utah Jazz. And I think they can make the playoffs this year. But once we get past this year, I'm not really sure what they can do. And that's why the idea of a 42-win basketball team led by Neek, Keon, Keegan, the young fan favorites who haven't pissed anybody off yet and aren't making any money, Maxime Reynaud, that will excite fans more than a 42-win season. led by guys making, you know, $30 million, $50 million, $45 million, whatever it is. That's not going to excite people the same way, despite the fact it's the same exact amount of wins, and it's likely the same level of kind of ups and downs that'll take place throughout the year. Perception, expectation, all of those things factor into our feelings. The year following the Beam team was a 46-win season. Yeah, it was 48 to 46. So 48 wins Beam team year, 46 wins the next year. Take yourself back a couple of years ago. I'm not asking hindsight and comparing it to how you feel now. I'm asking you to take yourself back to that year following the Beam team, following that playoff loss to the Golden State Warriors and that 46-win team. Most people were thoroughly disappointed that year. Six more wins than last year, only two less than the year prior. Only two less than the playoff year. But still, so many were frustratingly disappointed. Why? Your expectations. Your expectations were different, and that sets you up for disappointment. Not you, us. That set all of us up for disappointment. We'll come back. We'll talk more Kings basketball. I want to hear from you. I see a lot of you in the chatty house having your thoughts on this. 916-909-1320. Hit the phone lines. I need a co-host for the day again. 916-909-1320. Steelin' with Casey, brought to you by Sky River Casino and Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall. Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's morning lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Hey, big ups to everybody who's ever hit me up on Instagram. That's where, like, if you ever want to reach me, like, shoot me a DM on Instagram. You're much more likely to get a reply than on Twitter. But it's at D'Lo on the radio. I switched it because the FM stuff, it's not my favorite, but play along with me. It's at D'Lo on the radio. The amount of people I know, I know Norm did. Gerald just hit me up. The amount of people who have stopped at Q1227 because they heard us talking about it, man, I really appreciate that. Chef Q is my guy. I'm a huge, huge fan of Chef Q and a huge fan of Q1227. And my man Gerald hit me up, and I think he went over the weekend. Got the lobster bites, fried chicken, and scallops. Woo! If you ever go in there, man, those lobster bites, they're on the appetizer menu. On point. Y'all got to try those. But I love anytime anyone shows up there at Q and hits me up about it, man. I appreciate that. I love that. I'm going to stay supporting Q. If y'all haven't checked out Q1227, over at the Roseville Galleria, do it. I haven't had a bad thing on the menu. The steaks always hit. The fried chicken is on point. You will never, ever, ever go wrong with the fried chicken. The lobster bites, you've got to get those. Katie is a seafood girl. She gets the octopus salad on the regular. And, oh, she got that. Her and my girl Vonda got the seafood tower one day. Lord, they was in heaven, man. Daryl says, D'Lo, I thought you were plant-based. My brother, those days have come and gone. I started easing back into, you know what it really was is I'm still, is even though I hype up these restaurants, I'm still primarily plant-based. When I go home and cook, it's primarily plant-based food. But I started going out on nice dinners and wanting to eat food. Like, I wanted to try lobster bites. I wanted to try stuff, and it wasn't ever like an allergic reaction or a sickness. It was just like, that's just the way I ate. Like, I believe plant-based diets are really good for you. which is why I've kind of stuck with a primarily plant-based diet. But like, man, when I'm out to eat, and even though, you know, vegan and vegetarian options and all of that stuff are plentiful these days, yeah, man, I want the ribeye sometimes. Serve it up. Yo, I see that salmon. Yeah, let me try it. So, yeah, I kind of switched up, man. I went pretty hard in the paint for like 12 years. And I still believe it is a great, great way to eat. But when I'm in Vegas, man, I'm gonna eat. Believe that. Let's hear from you, man. Elk Grove Kia Talk Line, 916-909-1320. DJ, what's up, DJ?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Good, man. I just wanted to piggyback off the little Devin Carter thing. I think, honestly, I know a lot of people, you know, in chats and stuff were saying, like, you know, we kind of harsh on him, but I think we kind of lenient. Like, you know, he got paid. He was, what, the 13th overall pick. You know, he's a millionaire, man. This is his job, you know, and us as fans, you know, our job is to evaluate and have comments on it. And he's not good. I think Bronny probably better than him right now. Like, if you look at Bronny last year and you look at Bronny this year, you see a little step. Like, I don't see none of that in Carter. I honestly don't.
Yeah, nah, hey, DJ, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for the call. And I know it's not popular to talk about, you know, Bronny playing well. Bronny's had a nice little summer league, and what DJ said, I think DJ's right. Like, Bronny has a little, like, hey, what's good? Bronny has a little second year flair to him. I don't know if he's better than Devin Carter, but I'm not going to say that he's not. I mean, Devin Carter was a lottery pick. Maybe he shouldn't have been, but he was. I think to DJ's point is you watch Bronny from last year to this year, even just in the summer league, like he looks like a better basketball player. Devin Carter to Devin Carter right now, you're just kind of like, I'm not really sure. Of course, Devin had significantly more NBA minutes than Bronny had, and that's where the true comparison is going to lie. But like, I get it. Like, I don't think I'm being lenient. I don't think we're being too lenient. I'll disagree with that on DJ. I don't think we're being lenient with Devin. I feel like I'm trying to be fair, and I'm trying to recognize that, you know, bro didn't have a training camp. He didn't have what you would call, and that's probably not the right word, but he didn't have a traditional rookie season. But like I said, man, there is just something that frustrates the hell out of me with him. And I didn't think, like, I really didn't even care what Devin was going to do today. I was tuning in. I was thrilled when I saw that the Sacramento Kings put out that Maxime Reynaud was available. Obviously, we knew Neek was going to play. I was like, all right, cool. Whatever Devin does is whatever. Let's see what these guys do this 12:30 start against Phoenix. And I swear, it was just like, man, Devin, get up. Stop running into Max. Stop turning the ball over. Stop airballing threes. And it feels like an unnecessary thing to do to pick on Devin at this point, because the Sacramento Kings are, in fact, 4-0. They're headed to the tournament round of Summer League, and they obviously have their eyes set on a Summer League championship. Most of these teams don't want to play into the second weekend. Hey, but shout out to the Kings for going out there and trying to get things done. This Kings basketball team, this Doug Christie coaching staff, you know, the guys on his staff, yeah, man, they're going to be competitive. They're going to want to win. You see Doug in a pickup game. He's going to win. He's not going to just get run. He's going to get the dub. And I love the idea of these Kings players going out there and trying to get the win, trying to get the dub. 19 points for Neek, and I think the thing that will be the talking point tonight and tomorrow on the podcast, on the insiders, and so on and so forth, is not just the 19 points from Neek, not just another really solid fourth quarter from Neek, but my man had nine assists, one turnover.
Maxime's kind of been the mystery door type of guy for everyone. They're like, oh, what's over there? But Neek has been the best player for the Kings in summer league so far.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. That's the perfect way of putting it. Like, was that Maxime Raynaud first quarter? That was the first game, right? Where he had like 11 points.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the ultimate way to start. It's like 11 points out the gate first game. Like, hey, okay. A position of, hey, we've got something here. But I think the way you put it is perfect. He's that, he's the guy behind the mystery door. It's like, oh man, this is cool. Here's the shiny new car. If we're sticking with the game show analogies, Neek Clifford is the shiny new car. And the thing that just, I'm sorry to continue to repeat myself. Man, my brother looks so composed. He looks composed. He looks comfortable. He doesn't look like the moment is too big. And let's not forget, like, we can downgrade this by calling it summer league. But, hey, this is NBA basketball. It's their first taste of NBA basketball. Riley makes a hell of a point. Max had that Jake LaRavia moment. That's 100%.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, if Jake LaRavia doesn't have that moment when he steps on the floor and he gets signed by the Los Angeles Lakers, I'm not saying nobody cares, but nobody's really thinking
twice
about it.
No one's torn up about it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay. Like, Jake LaRavia
was cool. He was fine.
He was fine. Yeah. He was a fine basketball player. His whole tenure was built off of that moment. Max absolutely had that. The moment he stepped on the floor here in Summer League. And whether it's frustration with Devin, excitement about Neek, and mystery about Max, go back to the conversation with Chris Biederman 3 hours ago. Is there anything we can really learn from Summer League? And the answer, unfortunately, is no, we can't. Or, if you want to be a little bit more on the optimistic side, you would say, no, we probably can't. And Chris Biederman lays out the time he went to Summer League to cover Steph Curry and how there were players on that Summer League team that outplayed the recently drafted Steph Curry. And, like, that's an example that Chris Biederman used from his past to accentuate that point. We all remember the Marvin Bagley California Classic moment. It's just basically a version of Summer League. Like, everybody remembers that moment. What ultimately did it teach us? What ultimately did we get out of it? What ultimately did we learn? What ultimately came from that? Nothing. Nothing. What Summer League can do is it can light up our imagination for the next 3 months, 2.5 months, whatever it may be. 2 months. It could light up our imagination. And it's going to do that. There ain't nothing wrong with that. Because that's ultimately, that's what gets us. Once this is all over, once the Sacramento Kings Summer League is done, whether it's an elimination or a championship, all that gets us to the start of NBA training camp is our imagination. No different than being a 49er fan, Raider fan, Cowboy fan, Packer fan, Steeler fan, football fan, fan of any team in any sport. When your team is not playing and you see little glimpses of things, you get workout videos, you get quarterbacks and wide receivers working out, you get batting practice, you get Summer League, California Classics, you get all that different stuff. All that gets you through to the start of the season, to the start of training camp, is your imagination. Start of training camp 6 days away for virtually every NFL team. then you'll spend the next 6 weeks, 7 weeks talking about, oh, what could be? Oh, what if we did this? What if we did that? We'll have Hall of Fame games. We'll have preseason games, all of which we'll be very excited to see until they start. Unless you, and you could be a super fan of a team, especially football. This is not so much the case in basketball, especially football. Kyle Madsen, Chris Biederman, those guys, I guess me, Casey, those guys who have to cover these football teams, yeah, you lock in. But there's a certain point where we get to the third quarter, we get halfway through the third quarter, we get into the fourth quarter. With all due respect to you, my brother, I am not going to say your name ever on my radio show. So I'm going to tune out, and I'm going to go back and watch what Brock Purdy did earlier, or go back and watch what Juwan Jennings did earlier, or go back and watch what the guys that I need to cover did earlier.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
But you can use your imagination to get you to believe that your team that finished 3-14 last year might be able to work their way up to 8-9. Man, if things break right, they could be 9-8. It's the same thing. It's a little bit more difficult in the association. In the NBA or in the NFL, that turnaround could be quick. That turnaround can be super quick. In the NBA, it's a little bit different. You normally, you can see a turnaround coming. Obviously, a glaring contradiction to that is Detroit. Detroit entering last year, the Detroit Pistons entering last NBA season was one of the worst teams in the league. And no one predicted a turnaround last year. That's why I think Detroit is one of the more fascinating teams to watch this upcoming season. Detroit looked good. Detroit absolutely looked like a good basketball team. They were enjoyable to watch. You saw them play together. You saw J.B. Bickerstaff take a job nobody wanted and turn it into something. Caught everybody off guard. Oh, okay. Yo, this team got a style. Can they repeat that? Can the Detroit Lions repeat that? Or excuse me, can the Detroit Pistons repeat that? Genuinely do not know. Not that different than the Sacramento Kings. Sacramento Kings, 3-seed, beam team, 48 wins. Could they repeat it? No, not quite. Not quite. Can Detroit? I don't know. But your imagination, but the imagination of NBA insiders, NBA fans, all of that, they've got you. Hey, no, go ahead, pencil in Detroit. They're solid. No different than us talking about, hey, man, pencil in Neek. Pencil and Max. Maybe erase Devin. Whatever. Use your imagination. I used the analogy. I set up the scenario earlier about, you know, the Sacramento Kings winning 42 games off the strength of young guys, off the strength of Neek, Max, Keon, Keegan, and how Kings fans would be elated if the Kings, led by that group, finished with 42 wins, and how different 42 wins would feel if it was led by Domas, LaVine, and DeMar DeRozan. Your expectation headed into those respective, in this case, two separate seasons, would be different. Therefore, your enjoyment of those 42 wins would be different. You see a future with one group. You see disappointment in the other. And there's nothing wrong with feeling that way. It all brings us to the point where I think the Sacramento Kings were a unique mix of both. They're a unique mix of a team that can run with guys and have impactful moments and impactful games and have impactful season from guys like Keegan Murray, Keon Ellis. Fingers crossed. Nick Clifford, Maxime Reyneau. While still incorporating the guys who are really, I think, vital to their ability to win games right now. Dennis Schroeder, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, and Domantas Sabonis. And that's the true challenge of Doug Christie. Doug Christie doesn't have to plan for the future. This isn't the Dave Yeager thing where you have the Zach Randolphs. Who else was it? Garrett Temple, George Hill, all of those guys. The Vince Carters. It's not that. Because with all due respect, I don't know how vital those guys. George Hill maybe could have been, but I don't know how vital those guys were to wins with that team at that time. But DeMar, Dennis, Zach, Domont, those guys are very vital to the Sacramento Kings win-loss record. So that group didn't have the opportunity to do a mix of both. I think they tried, and it failed so quickly and so miserably. They called that audible halfway through the season where they told the players, yeah, we're going to kind of switch directions and go with the young guys. Then injuries started happening. I think George Hill got traded. Garrett Temple wound up playing a lot, and it kind of wound up changing what they had to do. But ultimately, it didn't result in anything good. If Doug Christie can find a way to work all of these guys together, man, a lot of things can work out for this basketball team. And I have absolutely no problem believing that this Sacramento Kings team can win games. Of course, my expectations aren't the Western Conference. There's a lot of teams in the conference better than them. There's a lot of teams in the conference that are probably a lot better than them. There's a couple of teams in the conference who I think are question marks. OKC, I think you could write them in Sharpie. Houston, I think you can write them in Sharpie. I love this offseason that Denver had. I think they're significantly more dangerous in the playoffs, and I believe that is a playoff team. And I don't really know that's a 50-win team. I assume they can be that, if not a little bit better than last year. The Los Angeles Clippers, even if I'm alone, I like the addition of Bradley Beal. I'm not writing the Clippers into winning the Western Conference, but I am looking at the Los Angeles Clippers as a 50-32 team last year who could potentially be better. Question mark teams to me are Minnesota. Because the way Kyle Mattson, if you were with us earlier, the way Kyle Mattson feels about the Los Angeles Clippers is exactly the way I feel about the Minnesota Timberwolves. Every year I will say the same thing about that basketball team. Just prove it. Now I go into the conference finals. That's cool. Like, do it again. I'll never go. I can't envision a scenario, especially with this group of Timberwolves, where I go into the year saying the Timberwolves are going to make the Western Conference Finals. And they might do it 10 years in a row. You'll never hear me say it in July. Or August or September or October. I said last year the Minnesota Timberwolves could win the NBA championship. And I'd be the guy the next day who goes, I still don't see it. Anthony Edwards would still be partying with Larry O'Brien, and I'd be like, all right, do it again. I don't believe in that basketball team, and I got a question about them heading into next year, and I've got questions about the Golden State Warriors also. That team had three seasons last year. The first one that was white hot, the second one, which was a massive disaster, and then the Jimmy one. Which one of those three are they? Now, the Jimmy one and the fast start, those are close to the same. So is that closer to the team that they are than that team that was Steph Curry had his hands on his head. He looked despondent following a Kings 30-point beatdown. Memphis won 48 games last year. Sent Desmond Bane off to Orlando. Questions about Ja Morant. Can Ja Morant stay healthy? What exactly is that basketball team? Everyone talks about how loaded. Oh, the West is loaded. The West is loaded. The West is loaded. All right, cool. Stuff happens. Phoenix was a 36-win team last year. No one predicted that. The New Orleans Pelicans, who beat the Kings in the play-in the year before, were a 21-win team last year. No one bought that. The San Antonio Spurs, who everyone said was making the playoffs last year, wound up not. We overhyped these conferences, and year after year, we're just wrong on them. So where will the Sacramento Kings finish in that? I don't know. They got to get through Summer League first. Appreciate you so much for being with us here today. If you're on YouTube, hit the thumbs up. If you missed any part of the show, you can subscribe to the D'Lo and KC podcast, wherever you get podcasts from. I'm going to head over to 102.5. You can join me there if you like. If not, we'll see you back here tomorrow at 10 a.m. with the Insiders on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall! Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes?
Check out MLB.com's morning lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.